And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is September 6, 2017, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are so happy to welcome back Doug Newsom after a vacation that probably made him all better. And we want to talk to all of you about what's going on in the world and how we have to pray to God to make sure that whatever can happen with hurricanes won't happen. Whatever happened with, explosion or missile attacks from North Korea won't happen. We want to save the day. We want to make everything possible to remember the sacrifice that everybody made, you know, in the name of liberty and freedom and happiness. And we need to pray to God to assist us, because this is time for grace, guys. If you don't realize it, well, you've been living in a different world. But right now, when you have Irma, you know, claiming grounds and coming all around to seek the seas to arrive to Florida, God, you need to understand that it can be a miracle, but it can be stopped if God willing. We need really to, I don't know how things happen, but I know that with the power of the will and a deep prayer, we can. And that's why I want to start today with a prayer to God to bless you all, to make sure that you're all strong and safe and protected and cover and have shelter, and wherever you go, you always will be happy. I really want to send all of my blessing from the Holy Land to America that deserve all the blessing, with a lot of love and a lot of thanks for everything she did all over the years for everybody around the globe. America being a torch of hope for everybody. That's why everybody went there and sees her and want to stay there. But the idea that something will happen again, you know, after what I saw happening to Texas, I can't even imagine. And Florida. Florida is like a place where people go to vacation from all over the world. It's the house of many people, visitors, friends, Disneyland, for God's sake. So we really want her to be safe, and I want to pray with you all. And I'm crying. You know why? It's so hard to see the devastation, especially these days when we are like, it's September 6th, 5 days away from 9/11, a day that we all have it in our hearts. Whoever loves America knows the feeling of a betrayal that we all felt that day. When you wake up in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, and I see it on CNN live, and I see the tower, the second tower, blow up. You know, maybe people forget, but, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy to keep going when people are trying to destroy a nation like America. And the devastation that happened with the hurricane now, it's like calling everybody to attention to the fact that we must get our act together. You know, we can do whatever we want, and then there is a moment when God makes a difference. You know how he makes a difference. Change the rules, change the game. And what he did in America and what he showed us in Texas is like how mankind can and, you know, be brave under the devastation, but be helpful, be caring, be kind, be supportive, be lovable. That's America. That's Texas. That's the people that we all look up to and cherish and respect enormously. We love you guys, and we want you to be safe. That's why when you fight, it's not even normal. It's not America. And that fighting that went on and on and on, it's it's not for freedom. It's actually destructive mode that you were all in, and now God came and interfered. You know, I don't know. I don't speak for God, but I can tell you that's what it looks like. And you see, the spirit of humanity comes around again. It, you know, you taught them well. You taught the people well what is caring. So I salute the people of Texas. I send all my best to my friends there with a much appreciation and thanks. And I know that you're all there hoping for a different day. And I promise you, it's going to be if we get our act together. And destroying another nation won't do it, right? So before we start talking about everything, let's start with the music that maybe will remind us, you know, what we are all, if, you know, let's start. If I have the 9/11 music that remind us, because we have to honor those sacrifice we had that day. Alright guys, we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth, and we are very excited today because we found some icons, I guess, on Skype that made all the difference in the world. And I'm so happy, Doug, that you're happy, because if you're happy, we all happy. Anyway, let's go back to reality, because with me, you always will find God, and you find hope, and you find laughter, and you forget the reality sometimes is running under us, and we need to touch base with her every so often. So now we have Florida is bracing for Hurricane Irma. God willing, she'll skip us and she'll get, you know, numb, I don't know, on the way, and she'll stop being an hurricane. Let's hear what they have to say about it.
Preparations are hard to get right now. Here is one of many, many gas stations in South Florida where there are no cars here because there is no gas here. Every single pump, no gas, no gas, no gas. Joining me live right now, Nigel Wallace with AT&T. How difficult has it been to try to find any gasoline for your vehicle?
Pretty difficult. This is like my fourth one going to it. Every gas station either has no gas or they only have premium. People are forced to put premium. Our boss actually told us that it was okay for us to put premium in our trucks because there's no gas down.
Think about the sense of panic among the people.
Every day it gets worse and worse the closer we get. I feel like people should have prepared a little while ago. I've been ready for like maybe a week now, which every day we get closer, it gets worse and worse.
Thanks, Nigel. Good luck to you. Florida City is basically the end of the line on the Florida Peninsula. From here, you go south and you cross over to the Florida Keys and Key Largo. There is a mandatory evacuation for all the Keys from Key West up to Key Largo for all tourists. That began at sunset last night. Here's the traffic flow coming out of the Keys. You see people hauling on the boats. I've been seeing a lot of jet skis on trailers coming out. And traffic, when I was driving south from Miami this morning, the northbound traffic was borderline insane. People were crawling. Tensions are high. People are panicking without a doubt. And that is the situation right down there. Over in Miami Beach, all night long and this morning, people have been filling up sandbags because that's a very low-lying barrier island. The mayor there anticipates that eventually there will be a mandatory evacuation on all the barrier islands, especially Miami Beach. But that hasn't happened yet, although he was encouraging people to go ahead and get started because traffic, as we get closer to Friday and Saturday, traffic is going to be crazy throughout the state. I know that people are emptying shelves at basically every grocery store and Home Depot. I tried to get cases of water last night. completely empty. Everything cleaned out. And it's also happening up in Gainesville, up in Orlando, and even in the Tampa area, as all of these forecast spaghetti models show this storm making a northbound turn and basically impacting the entire state. But right now, South Florida is certainly bracing for something they haven't seen in a long, long time. Mm-hmm. It's been 25 years since Hurricane Andrew, and reportedly, meteorologists are saying with 185-mile-an-hour winds, Hurricane Irma is rivaling the size of Andrew.
And, you know, I've been in South Carolina for so many years, and I remember that every time they show us an icon, I would, imagine how it's going to go, because you have a direction kind of sense. And once you have that direction, directional sense, you actually understand where it's going to go. But this time they decided that it's going to turn on Florida. And for me, from the angle that the hurricane is coming, it looks like it's going to go again where it'd been before. So I don't know about Florida, but I wouldn't bet that it will turn all the way to Florida. I'm serious, because I've been around for some of them. South Carolina, thank God, didn't suffer, but you have to understand, we pray a lot there, and every time it's about rain, it's the cold and the hot weather that weather that created the atmosphere for it to grow. That's what they say, if I got wrong. So they have to invent something to do so. But on that note, I want to take you back to the governor of Texas, one of the heroes of those days, because if this man in a wheelchair can do what he does, I'm telling you, guys, we need to look up to this man and understand the challenges is only in our state of mind. Let's listen to the governor of Texas.
But we want to let people know they are not out of the woods. There is so much flooding risk and danger here still. There have been about 50 inches of rain that has fallen because of Harvey, if you can imagine that. It is soaked here. You can see the bayou next to me that is just, it has swelled to five times its normal size. So this is a record falling rain, as you've heard. It is, in fact, historic. It's the most for any of the continental U.S. And of course, now the city is trying to figure out what next. They're still trying to rescue people from their homes, and they're trying to figure out how to rebuild. So joining us now is the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott. Governor, thank you so much for taking time to be with us this morning.
Sure. Thank you, Allison.
Governor, tell us about the president's visit to the state. Tell us what he accomplished.
Well, it was very important for the president to show up and to show how much he cared about the state of Texas, about our citizens, and about his commitment to helping Texas get through this emergency process and then rebuild. Importantly, in addition to the president, we had cabinet members such as the Secretary of Homeland Security, Secretary Tom Price of Health and Human Services, who is playing such a key role about what's going on in Houston right now. We had the FEMA administrator here, where we were able to begin to strategize how we are going to address this issue both in the short term and in the long term. But as far as the president himself is concerned, I got to visit with him at length and see both his compassion and his commitment to helping Texas get through this process.
And Governor, do you think that the president should have talked more about the victims? I mean, when you talk about his compassion, obviously there's some criticism today that he didn't talk enough about the victims. He didn't reach out to them enough.
Well, I know that he talked to me at length about the victims and about the devastation that he saw and about his deep concern about what people were going through. He and I together were watching on TV the flooding that was occurring in Houston. He didn't want to go to that location because he didn't want to interfere with it. But he expressed his sorrow and deep concern about how these people's lives have been completely inundated and his compassion and commitment to help them respond. And as I think you've reported, he will be going there soon to try to help the people in the Houston region But he also understands this is bigger than just Houston. He is concerned all the way from Corpus Christi and Port Aransas to the flooding that is now going on in the Beaumont region.
And, you know, we heard him say to you, we'll hold off on our congratulations at the moment because obviously we're not out of the woods yet. But he was saying that it's been a great effort. I think everyone would agree. But did you want him to call upon, put out the word for more help, to have more Americans be involved in sort of this moment of coming together for Houston and Texas?
Well, sure. What we talked about was that we have had a very collaborative and seamless connection between the federal government, the state of Texas, and the local governments for a remarkable response to, as you pointed out, a record flooding. But also we talked about where we go from here and what needs to be done from here to take care of the challenges that Texans are going to be facing for months and for years to come. And we began to talk in detail about how we will continue to work seamlessly to make sure that we address these ongoing challenges.
And okay, so speaking about what's next, the Pentagon says that the U.S. military has 30,000 troops and equipment at the ready to serve Texas, and they're just waiting for the green light from you to send them. Are you giving them the green light today?
Well, yeah, sure. It's hard for you all to know what goes on behind the scenes. Let me bring you up to date. And that is, I personally, as well as my staff, have been in constant contact with the Department of Defense. 3 and 4 days ago, I personally and my staff spoke with the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Secretary Shanahan, and we talked about what our needs were. The first was needs for more high water vehicles, which we were able to get hundreds of them into the Houston area. And then I personally spoke with the Deputy Secretary about our need for personnel. At that time, multiple days ago, we spoke about the need to get these personnel triggered and implemented and deployed into the state of Texas. And so we've already begun the strategy about how and when that will be done. Before that occurred, you may have reported that I unleashed the full complement of the Texas National Guard, 12,000, and they were working to get into Houston. They could not even get into some parts of Houston because of the flooding itself. So it's a matter of getting into the right locations. But as we were talking earlier, we will be deploying the U.S. National Guard at the right time to multiple locations, not just in the Houston area, but as you can see in the Beaumont area, all the way over to the Corpus Christi area and Port Aransas and places like that as we rebuild. We know this is going to be a huge operation. The president and I spoke about the necessity of us working together to ensure that we get those National Guard members deployed at the right time, at the right location.
And so, Governor, just help us understand this. Is today not the right time? Are you waiting?
We are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. I'm so sorry about the interruption before. It just happens sometimes because somebody hacked into my AOL account yesterday and decided to send a love letter to all my friends all over the globe to ask him for money. So everybody were calling me and ask me if if I'm okay, if I'm in Spain, if something got lost. I said, no, I'm not in Spain, but you can send the money. Not a problem. But seriously, they got hacked and I got hacked and they're going to follow up on them and see what's the – because it's really getting out of hand. It's disturbing so many people. I'm so sorry about that. So I apologize. It's not here. We're all good and safe here in Israel. And we hope that you all there. Now, let's go back. You see, the Florida hurricane is coming. And while we are trying to handle the Texas one, the idea of composing the logistic of this is immense. And I was sitting last week with some contacts of mine. And we asked what we can do to help. And I said to them, let's create a task force that will assist them. And how you assist in such a distance, you assist with logistics. Logistic is only the sum of information and the interpretation of necessity and needs and eloquent resources to supply and you and demand and you send on. Did I make sense out of it? I know that we have the narrative, so I probably hope to get a copy because I don't remember what, you know, no, really. What you need to do is to gather all the information. You have now people that are under shock. They are still with friends and family. They are in shelter. You know, we have tens of thousands of people in shelters. They all will need to get up. You need some powerful will to do so, remember, in this kind of condition. And we all have to assist them. And then gather the information and what they need. There are children that need to go to school. You need to implement some kind of situation which they all will live in. And that situation is not easy, but there is a way to sustain it. Now, let me take you to a story, okay? Or a story, kind of story. So you might see the images. You see, when the people of Israel got dispersed, and I'm talking about people of Israel because that's the only relationship that, you know, we can have with history when they come from the Bible and they talk about it, but we have actually the reality of it. So when they got dispersed from the Second World War, there were a lot. And the only way that we had a place to go to is a safe haven, that the Holy Land, Israel, that's our ancestors' land, right? So we had a place, you had the space. Okay, think about Texas right now. It's all messed up. So you need to get a space. And then what we did, we went and created the idea of the kibbutz as a shelter. The shelter is to go. You build up communities together. You sit in a very, very low resources housing, but you accumulate all the resources to a center of livelihood of the children, school, implementation of production that they can build life on, farming or whatever you decide to do. And then you create a community that is humble, of course, and simple, but it sustains itself for long run until you construct. So I would reorganize the same community in the same way. That's my only thought, guys. Please bear with me because I love you. I'm saying it with my love to you, to say you don't want them to stay in shelter forever, but I bet you can gather some trailers from all over, new, beautiful, put them in a different dry land, collect the community name by name, the same people name by name, and create some kind of a kibbutz. Yeah, the kibbutz of Texas. What do you know? It's something that will be temporary shelter, but it will be immediate, because you don't want them to stay in shelter forever on, you know, beds. It's nothing good can happen from there. From now on, you need to take them and drive them home to safety, right? So we just relocate them until we can handle the grounds on the in Texas, in Houston, or elsewhere. Whatever you have as condition, you need to go and collect them, put them. You can call it a vacation park, you can call it once in a way on the way park. It doesn't matter. You just do a park. Think about it. You can have also rollover, not just trailer. The one those big cars that they can move people around, and bring the families with the little belonging that they still have left, and bring them together. And create a promise for them. Because if you let this situation go on for a long time, the money from the government going to be wasted, as you know. It's going to be a devastation for too many people. And we cannot let it be. We are smarter, we know better, and we can do it. So I was asking my friends all over, said, we are having a task force. Let's make a task force, like collect people, collect data, collect resources, estimate it, and make it really a low budget one. We are not going to, you know, squeeze America off right now, because that's probably what can happen. And sure enough, I remember the day that we had a big earthquake in California, 94, and we had a little company, a construction company that we built, and of course all those builders were stranded. They needed people, and we wrote advertising in the newspaper, and we wrote to anybody who needs help to rebuild the house, we'll give you the same price as contractor give, you know, for a big company. Not the opposite. Not the uprise the pub. And we are there for you because we want to make your home, your house, home again. That's what we want to do there. And as a construction company that lived for a long time in California and helped build Sun City Hilton Head in South Carolina for more than 11 years, I can vouch that we're doing it with much love and care for the community. So let's start thinking about how to create a world that is better. And I know that we're fighting, you know, apparently we're fighting a global war of words with North Korea right now. But there is no time for war right now, even though I understand. So I collected something from Reagan era to let you understand, you know, it's perception. I'm just putting it in front. Just you listen to it, okay? Let's listen to How to Handle a Terrorist. And I hope it's in queue now.
7 o'clock this evening, Eastern Time, Air and Naval Forces of the United States launched a series of strikes against the headquarters, terrorist facilities, and military assets that support Muammar Gaddafi's subversive activities. Colonel Gaddafi is not only an enemy of the United States. His record of subversion and aggression against the neighboring states in Africa is well documented and well known. He has ordered the murder of fellow Libyans in countless countries. He has sanctioned acts of terror in Africa, Europe, and the Middle East, as well as the Western Hemisphere. And for us to ignore, by inaction, the slaughter of American civilians and American soldiers, whether in nightclubs or airline terminals, is simply not in the American tradition. When our citizens are abused or attacked anywhere in the world on the direct orders of a hostile regime, we will respond so long as I'm in this Oval Office. Self-defense is not only our right, it is our duty. It is the purpose behind the mission undertaken tonight. A mission fully consistent with Article 51 of the United Nations Charter. I salute the skill and professionalism of the men and women of our armed forces who carried out this mission. It's an honor to be your commander-in-chief. Despite our repeated warnings, Gaddafi continued his reckless policy of intimidation, his relentless pursuit of terror. He counted on America to be passive. He counted wrong. I warn that there should be no place on earth where terrorists can rest and train and practice their deadly skills. I meant it. I said that we would act with others if possible and alone if necessary to ensure that terrorists have no sanctuary anywhere. Tonight, we have. Thank you. God bless you.
All right. Remember Ronald Reagan? Remember him? Remember what a graceful man was he? But he was tough cookie. He didn't need to scream or shout to anybody's face. He was very much present. So this is America that I know. This is the Ronald Reagan America. And the Republican people, the Republican leadership that is now in play needs to remember that America is tough and strong. Now, North Korea, that is really, really trying to do her best to play with America and come and bring her to a fight knows nothing about the capability of America. Let me tell you, he's young, and sometimes young is stupid. And the North Korea, the Korean leader is not a smart cookie to mess up with America. And it's not just do not mess with America. It's about what we all want to see. He actually is trying to come to the negotiation table with some kind of fist to show that he's worthy of something. I guess somebody managed to give him what he has, because I don't see his people creating it. So he probably got it from somebody. And let's please don't think that those North Korean are the subject of our hate. They're not. But somebody else is double play us, and we know that. So what are we going to do? Are we going to play and you know, be silly and go after the one that they created? Of course not. You need to see who's actually playing in the mess. And my bet is China, but the Chinese are playing all roles, and they actually bankrupt the world from and its economy. They took all the assets and put it in Africa for 500 years, as they are used to, because in Africa you cannot find anything back in the short term. So when you take all the resources of the world and throw it elsewhere without putting it back, they corrupted the system. So now we have to go and negotiate back. Now, President Trump, please don't get mad with this North Korean kid. He's stupid. Somebody is the puppet of somebody. All the rest. Now, Putin is trying to help again. Let him help again. And if anybody has a problem with Russia, I want you to remember when Israel was in need. When Israel was in need in the creation of the state, Russia was the one that saved us. And I had a recording from Ben Gurion to say it. Only Russia helped Israel. So we cannot be disgraceful and not be thankful for that. So when we are thankful for America and we're thankful for Russia, we have a very, very big role to play of balance. And we need to understand that you guys are play like big people that you are. And if Putin trying to help, let's let them help, because China needs to be under control, of course, and North Korea is the puppet. Now, we are running out of time. Did I tell you that I pray for you a lot? Did I tell you that I cry your river just to think what you have to go through? I know when those tenders come, when the rain is going again and again. I know when next week Memorial is coming. You all have to be humble and stop hating each other. And it's not helping. And the Democrats need to go home and cry, because they are shameful. Nothing that I can say that I can recommend to them. They lost my respect in the last few months since the election. They really lost ours. Because if you look at the records, the fact that Hillary Clinton was not indicted for our mishandling the email and actually negligence and whatever you have on the book, that was not justice served. So if she got away with that and she wants to go for more, I think that we need to call also Benghazi. Then we'll call the China Gate. We'll call everything, because she needs to go back home and start writing her book, because we all tired from the America she destroyed and the rest of the world she tried to get her together. So we have to go now. I want to wish you peace. I love you, miss you, and happy birthday, Prince Harry. It's next week is his birthday, so happy birthday to him. And let's have some note of music and we'll go. I'll see you, I'll hear you next week. God bless. Bye-bye. Ciao, ciao.